This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast. We are presented by DraftKings, and it is a busy week in the world of mixed martial arts as we have got a trio of major events this week. On Thursday, we got PFL number 4, which has gone through some changes. Then on Friday, we got Bellator 260. Then on Saturday night, it is UFC 263. We are going to get you ready for those fights to come up here on this edition of the podcast. Of course, later on the show, we'll tell you about what's going on with DraftKings here for UFC 263. Now, Daniel, I said a couple weeks ago, I wasn't going to take the plunge. I wasn't going to order the Mayweather-Paul fight. Sunday night, I'm sitting on my couch. I say, you know what? Let me pop on the Showtime app. I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the plunge. Let me see what this spectacle is all about. Couldn't get the Showtime app to load on my iPad. Couldn't get to load on my Apple TV. I go on the Twitter. I see there's all these issues. I said, let me try it one more time. Try it one more time. Not working. I was like, maybe this is a sign from above to not purchase this thing. So I did not watch it. I went to bed and I saw all of the post-fight reaction after it. And of course, there is an MMA start of this where we saw the comments by Paulo Costa and Francis Ngannou, which, Daniel, my simple thought on this is it really took Jake Paul and Logan Paul for certain MMA fighters to realize they're not getting the proper piece of the pie.
Yeah, you would think the paycheck would give them a good idea that they aren't getting as much of the revenue as they should. I mean, when you look at those comments, it's important to understand that Logan and Jake Paul's pay-per-view fights are bringing in a lot of revenue, more so than any Paulo Costa fight. But that point doesn't disqualify the idea that UFC fighters are very underpaid because they're getting such a small sliver of the pie. But of course, man, yeah, we gotta start the show off talking about Logan Paul. Did we have a UFC event this weekend? Sure, but no MMA show this week is coming on and starting their show off talking about Jairzinho Rozenstruik, who looks great with his knockout win over Augustus Sakaire. Ponzinibbio and Miguel Baeza putting on a fight of the year contender. Gregory Rodriguez coming out and looking good. No, we are talking Logan Paul. We are talking Floyd Mayweather. And it makes a lot of sense because it captivated people's attention. I will say this much. I watched this fight on tape. It was quite boring. It wasn't exciting. I could imagine being frustrated if you were in our age group. With that being said, I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, and for like 15 seconds, he had his like young, I don't know how old his son is, 12, 13 year old son. And his son was just amazed at Logan Paul that he went in there with Floyd Mayweather and survived. So while so many of us old people are criticizing this fight, Logan and Jake, I think sometimes it's important to take a step outside of our own bubble and think, man, I wonder what the young generation, the young kids coming up, think of this. And I think we would be shocked at the way the young 12 to 16-year-olds think of Logan Paul and Jake Paul. I just thought of that when I listened to them on that podcast.
You know, when I couldn't get the Showtime app to load, my initial thought wasn't like, you know, what the hell or something along those lines, or let me get pissed off and go to Twitter and vent about it. My thought was more along the lines of, wow, it just really just showed you how much intrigue there was in this matchup. And, you know, Scott Coker had his comments about he being very interested in promoting Logan Paul, which, and I saw some people in the MMA community kind of, you know, going, you know, kind of like that, you know, WTF type thing. But I was like, if I'm in Scott Coker's position, why would I not want to be in the Logan Paul business? I don't know if financially it's feasible for Bellator unless they do go to a pay-per-view model. But like, if I'm in Scott Coker's position, hell yeah, I want to be in the Logan Paul and Jake Paul business. Because, I mean, look, there was a report that in terms of the satellite TV, that there was 600,000 buys. That didn't include the streaming number. Like, it just shows you, like, you know what? There may be a lot of people in the combat sports community that hate what Logan and Jake Paul have done to boxing, even though I think that they have brought some interest in boxing. But the fact is, these two guys, they bring eyeballs to the television set.
You know, I do think obviously they don't bring a significant interest to boxing, but I do think they bring a small interest to boxing. It felt like the fight between Taylor. Was it Taylor Ramirez that was on ESPN or something like that? That felt like it got a little more buzz. It feels like some of these boxing fights are getting a little more buzz because we're talking about the sport of boxing. So, you know, I will say this much. Logan Paul not getting knocked out by, like, one of the greatest boxers of all time is kind of a legitimate accomplishment. Like, I know Floyd didn't spend too many rounds searching for the knockout, and I know that's not Floyd's style, but at the end of the day, Logan Paul's this dude I saw on YouTube, and now he's doing an exhibition boxing match with a 40-some-year-old Floyd Mayweather, who's a Hall of Fame-level boxer. And the fact that he survived 8 rounds is legitimately impressive. The fight sucked. The fight was boring, but I do want to give some credit to Logan Paul. Again, you take any Joe Schmo on YouTube, you put him in the ring with Floyd Mayweather, fight's over 2-3 rounds depending on how long Floyd wants it. Credit to Logan. Dude went toe-to-toe with Floyd Mayweather. Was he much bigger? Yes, that probably played a role in his ability to survive. But, you know, Logan and Jake Paul, to me, are doing this weird thing where they are going from the bad guys to the good guys. And that's kind of what happens when you get in the ring and you prove it. I know Jake is putting himself in advantageous situations, but it's still impressive that he goes in the ring and he beats up former combat sports athlete like Ben Askren, even though we know Ben's kind of a trash striker.
Yeah, you know, in the Francis Ngannou tweet, which was, it's crazy to think that Logan Paul just made $20 million on a boxing expedition. What are we doing wrong? Which, I mean, look, and, you know, and I know a lot of people kind of came at Dana White, but I understand what Dana White is saying is that, you know, these two guys have built themselves up for years. And I just think it shows, I mean, even though, you know, does the UFC do a good job of promoting its fighters? No, they don't. I mean, I think everyone can sit there and agree they're going to selectively, you know, decide who they want to promote. I was listening to the UFC media day earlier today, and Jamal Hill was kind of talking about that. He's like, hey, I wish I was getting a little bit of a bigger push on social media from the UFC. But it just shows that in today's digital world, in this digital content world that we live in, the fact is that as fighters, you got to do things. And whether it's going on YouTube and doing a live Q&A for 30 minutes, an hour, to help develop your brand. I just think that, you know, and obviously Jake Paul has talked about MMA fighter pay. You know, do I really think that Jake Paul is going to be like this guy that magically, you know, becomes the guy who's, you know, pounding on the pavement to get fighters paid more? I don't think so. I think it's, you know, he's doing it to help his own cause. But, you know, I just don't think anything will change. I mean, fighters can complain about this, but I don't think anything's going to change.
No, I don't think so. Again, it's going to take something in the courts or a significant fighter unification process. And I think the courts is a more realistic situation than a fighter unification process. But yeah, I mean, credit to the Paul brothers. They stay in the headlines and other news cycle. I mean, Jake Paul and Logan are very similar to the way Conor built his star up, where every single day it's a different news story, it's a different headline. You know, I think it's real hard for these UFC fighters to build up their brands, but it might be a worthwhile investment. And I'm sure some of them do, but to really hire someone to help them get their social media presence up and going, because that investment in their social media presence and in making their own star could absolutely pay dividends as they continue to get more of a value. I mean, you look at someone like Valerie Lareda. She is just a much more valuable fighter than several other fighters at her skill level. And it has to do with her ability to garner an audience on social media, which translates to eyeballs on television when she's fighting.
Oh, no. You are spot on. I mean, you know, it's that's the thing that, you know, when you talk to various people, they're kind of like, you know, hey, how do you get to where, you know, a fighter can get an interview, say, with Barstool Sports? I mean, and Valerie Lareda is a perfect example. Yeah, she's going to get that interview just because she has created herself a profile. Of course, you know, a show that some people may go on to create a bigger profile is The Ultimate Fighter. We talked about it last week. 2 episodes are now out. I'm not going to say what's happened in the first 2 episodes in case you haven't watched it. You know, I know there's probably some people that maybe they're going to catch it.
You don't think we should spoil it?
I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that dick. I don't want to be that dick.
Okay, first off, counterpoint. There's no one getting upset about Ultimate Fighter spoiler. There's no one that was like, bro, I was planning on watching Tough and you spoiled. Who is getting excited about the Ultimate Fighter? So we won't spoil.
Dude, I'm telling you, bro, I have seen things on social media. Like, people are genuinely excited for the Ultimate Fighter being back. So I have watched the first 2 episodes. I watched the second episode last night morning, however you want to put it, about 1:30 in the morning, because you know, just to kind of tell you about the what's going on in my life, I got my second COVID vaccine on Monday. I was out of it on Tuesday. That's why this podcast is coming out a little later on Wednesday. I was, man, it kicked my ass. I'm telling you, man, it kicked my ass. You know, us guys, man, we get kind of sick. We become wimps real quick.
Yeah, I believe it, man. I believe it. And it's a shocking system. I'm glad that you're feeling better. And, you know, I want to give you a hug, man. I want to be like Logan Paul and Floyd Mayweather and give you a hug. I feel glad you're vaccinated. And, yeah, that and the lethargy, you must have felt the lethargy. The I don't even know how to say that word. You must have felt real damn tired. But I know watching Tough Fry put you to sleep.
Bro, I have slept so much over the last 24 hours. It's crazy. But like this is after watching episode one and episode two of Tough. I think the best way I can put it is the typical Ultimate Fighter season that we have seen throughout the years. Now, I will tell you, one of the things of kind of my biggest takeaways from episode one and episode two, not giving anything away, but I think Alexander Volkanovski comes off so much more likable than Brian Ortega.
I think he does, but Brian Ortega comes off way cooler. I'll tell you that okay, much. Ortega does call himself like, I think he calls himself like the greatest, one of the greatest coaches ever, which is just like,
I'm
who are you?
I'm pretty sure that is about the direct quote he did say, yes.
So he's very cocky, but man, he's real cool. Just the way you see him train people, it's like, I feel like I would want Ortega to be my coach, but I'd rather hang out with Volkanovski. Volkanovski seems a lot more fun, but man, Volk looks old compared to Ortega too. I mean, Volk looks like he's been through a war. I don't want to spoil anything, but I'll say this much. Just a couple notes that I have. One, there's a moment where somebody in a fight says, and his name is Aaron Phillips, he says, most of the MMA things I've learned on YouTube, which is just an astonishing quote, which I hope was taken out of context. I know he's from Alaska, but damn. Most of the MMA things I've learned on YouTube, like, bro, like, no, stop it. Like go to a gym. And I'm sure he has. I'm sure he's talented. And then also my other note was, I had two other notes. The poor guy who gets picked last, he gets picked and like he's walking to the team. No, he doesn't get picked, but he's walking to the team. And Dana's like, no, bro, go back. You got to get picked. I'm like, that's such a lame move. But then Dana like saves face by being like, hey, Kelvin Gastelum was the last pick. I feel like he's probably said that every single season since that happened. It's a great line. And then lastly, here's some constructive feedback to UFC production. And I know they do this all the time, but I'm going to be honest with you. I hate this. This is what I hate. And it's the like, I hate the interviews where they have like the light in their eye. You know what I mean? Like when you can see the light in their eye. I don't know why, but like it's fine if you're using a light, but bro, it's like an interview style where it's like super clear in their pupil. And I hate it because I can't stop looking at the light. I don't know. I only noticed in episode one. I didn't notice in episode two. I just realized it. But bro, like 20 minutes into that first episode, I just kept it like every single interview had that specific like aesthetic where it was like you could just clearly see the light in the pupil. So that just drove me nuts. Completely random. But that was a production note. And I know that's the style of the UFC. But yeah, that drove me nuts in episode one.
Yeah, no, dude, wearing glasses as here in my home office, I have to have additional lights up to make it bright. And so like one of the lights I have here is a ring light. If I had the ring light right in front of me, you'll see it right in my glasses. So I've got that off to the side, you know, to kind of take some shadows out. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But I mean, look, it's, you know, I thought some of the first off on the feature on Aaron Phillips, my initial thought on that, Daniel, was this. No way I'm ever living in Alaska.
Yeah, that looked awful. There was just so much snow, and I'm like, I would never go outside.
And then he's talking about how cold it is. I'm going, no, bro, no way. I don't think I could survive 3 days.
No, I don't think I could either, bro. I mean, I wouldn't survive a single day. I would not go outside. I couldn't. I mean, I'm from Texas. You're from Florida. That's not our style. You know, out of all the features, I really enjoyed the Mr. Pozo one. Just because his group of friends seemed really cool. And he's from Massachusetts. There's something about Massachusetts dudes. Massachusetts dudes are just real cool. I mean, going back to the Departed. I mean, if you're from, you're cool.
That's the one thing that I think that the production team does great with the Ultimate Fighter is telling the fighter stories. you know, and that's one of those things that I feel like, you know, for these random fight night cards, I think if you did stuff like that, I think that would help get people more interested in these, you know, every Saturday night fight night card.
Yeah. I think so. I think that specific thing, you can inject that into other parts of your advertising, and that would work really well. One of my other thoughts was this. I feel like the most entertaining part of this whole series is going to be the 1 minute Toya Tires flashback. The most entertaining part is whenever they show you 1 minute of when the show used to be good.
Okay.
They show.
What's that? So I saw that the first time I was watching episode one. I go, well, I need to put, you know, clothes in the washer. I'm going, I'm putting clothes in the washer. I was just like, I get what they're doing. I get their, you know, I'm sure probably on the ESPN Plus app, I'm guessing you could probably watch old seasons of The Ultimate Fighter, I'm guessing, or on Fight Pass. But I was like, yeah. But it also, it makes me feel very old, because the one on episode two was when Rampage tore up the door. And I'm thinking, good Lord, that was season 10.
Yeah, that was the Kimbo season. And I forgot, I kind of forgot about that moment. But just everything looked so old back then, and it feels like it wasn't that long ago that that season was happening. But, yeah, I mean, I will probably still watch, because it's really accessible. I will say this much. You know, UFC won't do it because they have a deal with ESPN. But I think the perfect platform for the UFC to put on some type of documentary-style show that will garner new audience, similar to the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, would absolutely have to be putting their stuff on Netflix. Because if you put a season on Netflix, you can get people to watch. Not of The Ultimate Fighter, but of a different style of show. I only say this because I've noticed so many people have been talking about Formula One because they've been watching that Formula One show on Netflix. And one of the thoughts I had is there's just so many people who are subscribing to Netflix. They're so accustomed to like going to the front page and watching stuff that's on the homepage. I think if the UFC wants to enter the water cooler conversation featuring people who have never watched the UFC before, the one place to do it would be a Netflix documentary.
No. I totally get you with where you're going there. I mean, but I think because of ESPN Plus, they're not going to go anywhere. Another news item before we get into this week's MMA. Alistair Overeem puts out a video where he's walking. He's got UFC gloves on. He takes them off. And, of course, at that point of this video going out, everyone's kind of questioning, does that mean he's retiring? Is it me? Maybe he's signing with Bellator. Well, he is signing with a new promotion. It's Glory Kickboxing. And I don't know how I feel about this, Daniel. Things haven't exactly gone Alistair Overeem's way in terms of striking.
Okay. Here, I got it. How about this? What if he releases one more video? He gets the UFC gloves. He puts them down. He gets the kickboxing gloves. He picks them up, and then he gets a bunch of steroids. Because, I mean, that's what's been missing, man. If he gets on the juice, he's going to win another K-1 Grand Prix.
Like, look, I'll say this. I think from a Glory aspect, this is a very smart move. Because I think that when you're trying to get that MMA fan to watch kickboxing, I think bringing Alistair back in, I think could help potentially bridge that together.
Oh, yeah. You got to feed the man some horse meat. Because I tell you what, bro, the last time I watched heavyweight kickboxing at a regular basis, it was a small amount of time, but it was when Alistair Overeem was competing. It felt like so many of us watched him win that K-1 Grand Prix. And I don't even know which one it was. I remember he won a Grand Prix. I remember he fought Badr Hari. He was a big star. But in order to get back to where he once was, he's going to have to use performance-enhancing drugs. Like, we joke about it, but like that's one of the big differences between his run in K-1 and Strikeforce and the way he fought in the UFC is he had to get off the juice. And like, yeah, I mean, to me, what made him such a damn good kickboxer is he used his power to knock people out. So we shall see what he looks like. If he goes without performance-enhancing drugs, I think he's probably not going to do too well. But if he does drugs, I think he will do well, Jason. That is my analysis. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
His last kickboxing matchup was 2011.
Who did he fight?
Peter Arts.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching those K-1 shows. I'm pretty sure they were on HDNet.
Yeah, but, man, that's a long time ago. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
No, those shows were legendary, man. And even that previous generation of K-1 shows was also pretty damn good with Arts. And, you know, Semi's show was pretty damn boring, but he was pretty damn good. But yeah, man, that's a good get for Glory. I think people will tune in and watch his first couple of fights and see what he does. They desperately need that injection into their heavyweight division.
Yeah. I mean, the question would be is if it's behind a paywall, will people pay for it?
No. I sure as hell wouldn't pay for it. I didn't pay for it back then. I mean, yes, I paid for cable, or my parents did, you know, back then, and they still do now. Thank you, parents. But it was easy to watch. It was on TV. I'm not going to pay $20 for a damn Overeem pay-per-view. You know why? Because I have 14 subscriptions, Jason. I've got a UFC pay-per-view every month. I got to watch the damn Paul brothers. I got to pay for my AEW. I'm not going to fit in Alistair Overeem. You want people to watch, put the damn thing on free TV.
Yeah, it's that'd be interesting. Like, if the Paul brothers did like a show like on, you know, over the air television, I wonder how much it would draw.
Oh wow, I mean, it would be amazing. It would be insane because that would be leaving so much money on the table. But I think, I mean, it would be huge. I mean, I think I couldn't even give you a good guess, Jason. But you know, we don't really have a good barometer. The only barometer we have, I guess. And this fight wasn't as big as the Paul brothers, but it would be like Kane versus Junior Dos Santos on whenever they went to Fox. Obviously, Kane and JDS aren't as big of stars, but that's the same idea of putting a pay-per-view fight on free TV.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, you know, Daniel, it is a big week in MMA. We got a trio events here coming up over the next couple of days. Thursday, we got PFL 4. Then on Friday, we got Bellator 260. And then on Saturday, it is UFC 263. Let's start off with PFL number 4. Of course, this fight card has gone through some changes here today as several fighters are no longer competing on this card, including Anthony Pettis, Lance Palmer, both off this card. It was an illness for Anthony Pettis. The reason Lance Palmer's off, I have not seen an exact reason why that's happening. Lance Palmer now has got a much tougher fight against Khabibov coming up here at PFL 6 here in a couple of weeks. But look, this card was all about Clarissa Shields even before today's changes.
Yeah, that's true. Although it is a bummer that we don't see Pettis fight. But I guess we'll maybe see him fight on PFL 6, fingers crossed. I wonder what the illness is. Because, you know, I want to see Pettis in the playoffs. Wouldn't really care if Palmer doesn't make it because he's pretty boring. But that would be a shocker if he doesn't make the playoffs. I mean, if you told me that Lance Palmer misses out on the playoffs, that would be crazy. But it's a real possibility. He's got a tough matchup. And who knows if that fight even happens. But yeah, what's driving our attention, you know, by the way, shout out Clay Collard, who got that big win over Anthony Pettis and put the pressure on Anthony Pettis. Now he finds himself, I would hope he finds himself, fingers crossed, on the main card because the man deserves it.
He's now the co-main event.
Yeah, that's the guy you got to promote. He got the big win over Anthony. Anyways, I tell you this much. I was reading this article from Mark Raimondi, I think, on, let me get double check it was him. On ESPN, yeah. And I was totally going to pick Clarissa Shields, but I'm going to pick her opponent. Oh, damn, her opponent's 3-6. Crap. This is a tough one. I guess I still got to pick Clarissa Shields, but, bro, I was really worried because I'm reading this damn article. And in this article, she just talks about how she's training at Jackson Winklejohn, and it talks about how she did her first MMA sparring in April. And I'm like, bro, it's April, May, June. It's been like 2 months, and that's when you first start doing MMA sparring? If you go up against someone who knows how to do a takedown, you're going to lose this fight.
Yeah, and I was watching a video on MMA Junkie where it was, I think it was a PFL promotional video, but it was interviews with Clarissa and also interviews with Brittany, her opponent, Brittany Elkin. And you can definitely tell Brittany Elkin's like, yeah, I'm coming to take this girl down because, well, that's a smart thing to do. You know, and that's like, it's one of these things, like we were talking the other day about like, if you're a PFL, you have to matchmake Clarissa Shields the right way. You know, obviously you would love if the fighter would sit there and have a striking matchup, but, you know, that's not going to be the case. You're going to be looking to take the fight to the ground. I mean, look, obviously the PFL believes that Clarissa Shields can win this one. And to me, this is, I feel like Clarissa Shields, you know, probably a view of the PFL is for her to essentially replace Kayla Harrison, because I think all signs do point to Kayla Harrison will bolt the PFL after this season.
And the thing is, Shields probably has more potential than Kayla Harrison in terms of viewership, I think, because of her fighting style. And she's already a known name to casual sports fans. I mean, not a whole lot of people know who Clarissa Shields are, but you will have seen her you know, throughout the years on ESPN, she's definitely the most famous female boxer, and she's been featured several times, especially telling her story, and especially around Olympic time. So I think Clarissa has a real upside to be a bigger star than Kayla Harrison, but she's got to deliver. And the thing is, you know, she clearly is an amazing athlete. She's clearly the best striker, you know, out of any female fighter, I would think. Obviously, the leg kicks probably aren't there, but the boxing alone, you know, makes her pretty damn fearsome. I just really worry for the preparation. The thing is, she's in one of the best camps on the planet at Jackson Winklejohn, so you would think they wouldn't lead her astray. But again, just the simple idea that she wasn't doing MMA sparring until 2 months ago, knowing that this fight was on the books, this potential fight was going to happen, it really, really concerns me. I think she's such a good athlete, such a great competitor that she'll survive. But man, if she was going up against an opponent who at least had a record that was 500, I would probably pick her opponent. But Clarissa Shields is in serious danger here, only because as damn good as she is as a striker, I mean, look at what happened with James Toney and Randy Couture. You get put on your back in this sport, it is donezo.
Yeah. I mean, but you know the one thing about this, though, which is kind of, to me, is fascinating. We see MMA fighters looking to go to boxing, but you see female boxers looking to come MMA. I think it says something about the financials of female boxing in comparison to MMA.
Yeah, yeah, it does. But look at the reality of the situation. Jason, if I put you on the spot right now and I asked you to name female boxers, you would not be able to name it. Would you be able to name me a female boxer that's not named Clarissa Shields?
You have, well, the ones that have come to the MMA route, yes.
No, you can't pick an MMA fighter. You can't.
I don't follow, like, I'll say this. I do not follow boxing outside of, like, the major boxing fights. I just don't follow it. Like, I can tell you Heather Hardy. I can tell you Serrano, who fights this weekend for Icon.
Did she do MMA?
Yeah, she's 1-0-1 now.
That's cheating. All right. But my point is this, man. You go to if this was a boxing podcast and I asked my boxing co-host, can you name me a female MMA fighter? I feel like they'd be able to name me five. Like, I think five.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I feel like there are female boxers who I've, like, off the top of my head, the only two female boxers I can think of is Katie Taylor in England. I think that's her name.
Yeah.
And Michaela Meyer in America. Those are the only two female boxers off the top of my head I can name, not name Clarissa Shields, who haven't competed in MMA. So, I mean, that just lets you know about the casual sports acknowledgement of, you know, female combat sports when you compare and contrast. And it's pretty damn simple. You are going to become a star and you're going to make more money in MMA as a female athlete than you are in boxing. It's as simple as that.
Now, one of the things that we mentioned is, you know, it's a bummer that we're not going to have Pettis on this card on Thursday and the changes that we have seen. But it actually could really add some intrigue when those matchups happen at PFL 6 because, you know, when you look at this, the points of where we sit here, you got Brandon Laughlin, who's got 6 points, Bubba Jenkins, who's got 3, Khabilov's got 3, Diamond's got 3. Chris Wade has 3. So this could really bring a little, you know, little intrigue here in a couple of weeks, depending on how this thing plays out at 145 pounds. And then when you look at the 155 pounds, you had all the fighters have that, you know, got the decision wins, got 3 points, of Collard, Aliyev, Martinez, who was supposed to take on Pettis, and Marcin Held all have 3. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how this plays out. It does offer a little bit of intrigue, but yeah, it definitely takes a little bit out of it. I would say probably the matchup on this card that probably does interest me the most is Brandon Laughlin versus Tyler Diamond outside of obviously the main event.
Yeah, yeah. I think the main event for me, like you said, that's number one. Look, I think the other fight that interests me, bro, is Nathan Schultz and Alexander Martinez. Because, I mean, Schultz, someone we've seen have so much success, similar to Lance Palmer, and his back is against the wall. He needs to win this fight, and he probably needs a finish. So that's what makes this fight with Nathan interesting to me. And then, you know, Marcin Held, too. I think Marcin Held and Oliver Aubin-Mercier is a UFC-quality fight. And held is the reason why Natan doesn't have a single point. So when it comes to this lightweight field, I really think Marcin Held is my pick to win it all, but he's going to have to show it against Aubin Mercier. Now, you know, Clay Collard comes out and looks like a gangster against Luderbach, then, you know, maybe I'll switch to Collard. And by the way, I'm just interested to see how Bubba Jenkins looks after pulling off the upset of the season so far over Lance Palmer.
And the thing about Marcin Held was his striking. You just saw an evolution in his striking from the guy that we saw in Bellator and the UFC to that one. Just looked unbelievable. Of course, now before we get into UFC, or before we get into Bellator 260 and UFC 263, do want to let you know about our presenting sponsor this week, and that is DraftKings. This weekend's UFC 263 is sure to be a can't-miss event. Every punch, kick, and knockout means so much more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the UFC, is giving you a shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering all customers a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes.
If you haven't tried it yet, Fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Plus, don't forget about basketball and hockey, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs throughout the week. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience.
And it's a great way to take in the fights. Gives you a little action kind of going on there with when you're looking at your DFS line. So be sure to check out our presenting sponsor, DraftKings. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code MMAReport for your shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the week. That's promo code MMAReport to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. And of course, I will tell you, you probably got to prioritize those top three fights because they are all 25-minute fights. So I do appreciate it. And of course, when you use that promo code, that lets DraftKings know you heard about here on the MMA Report podcast. Dan, before we get into UFC 263, let's talk a little bit about Bellator 260. And I mentioned this to you earlier this week, and it was, where does Douglas Lima and Amosov line up in terms of your top five fights that you're most interested to watch this week?
Man, it lines up pretty damn high. And to give you the answer, it's probably number four. And the only reason being, I love those top three fights. I'll give you a second reason. It's the fighting style of Amosov scares me, because I think there's a real possibility that we see him become the new champion, but it might not be the most exciting fight. At the end of the day, it's one of the most competitive contests of the entire weekend. Looking forward to it greatly. Jason, where does Amosov Lima line up for you?
This is a tough one for me. So Izzy Vettori is my number one fight. I would say my number two fight is probably Edwards Diaz. That's just, of course, just because of more, you know, Nate's going to bring the fight. Then you've got Moreno Figueiredo. You know, look, I'm intrigued in Clarissa Shields up there. I'd probably say three or four for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, I forgot about the Clarissa Shields fight. I mean, to me, the Amosov Lima fight is part of that top tier because, you know, these are two of the top welterweights on the planet. And it's great because it's what you want in a contest, in that Amosov has continued to prove that he is one of the top dudes. Well, this is the perfect test. And I'm very much excited for this fight, man. And I've gone back and forth, and I'm going to ultimately pick Amosov to win this fight just because we've seen Douglas Lima lose fights like this type of style. And this is just an unbeaten challenger who really looks like he has a world of potential. So I think he's going to grab the title away from Lima. But it's a dope fight just because it's a very close fight in my mind. And when you have a close fight featuring two of the top contenders and competitors in the weight class, it does get much better than that.
I feel like it comes down to Lima's takedown defense. If the takedown defense is there, I think he takes it. But if it's not, I think we will have him new.
Yep, absolutely. And I think the other thing is, it's also a matter of if Amosov is going to continue to move forward and if Lima's going to be on the back pedal. I mean, that could be a big problem for Lima. So I think for him, he's got to push the pressure. And it's kind of a similar situation on the main event of UFC 263, where it's like, well, if Vittori has success with his takedowns, we could have a new middleweight champion. If Adesanya allows this fight to play out on the feet, and I know it was close the first time those two fought on the feet, but Adesanya, to me, has continued to evolve his game, and I think on the feet, he's clearly the better fighter. But, you know, Amosov, Lima, Vittori, Adesanya, the commonality between these two main events is you have one, the challenger clearly has a clear path to victory and is scoring the takedown in these five-round fights.
Yeah, just look at the betting odds. Douglas Lima, only a minus 120 betting favorite, plus 100 for Yaroslav Amosov. I will say this overall about this Bellator 2-6 card. I think it's a nice Bellator card. You got Paul Daly versus Jason Jackson in the co-main event. This will be at 175 pounds. Paul Daly has called himself the 175-pound champion. I mean, look, you're always excited to see a Paul Daly fight. Of course, you know, Jason Jackson, unfortunately, his last fight, getting his eye cut on the cage. You know, this is – and Jason Jackson, I mean, you can very well make the case. He gets a win here. He's probably he's probably getting the winner of Lima Amosov. I know earlier today Lima was asked about Michael Page and basically kind of said, like, hey, Michael Page, how about you go be a top contender, and then we can talk about you getting a title matchup. And, you know, Michael Page had those comments a week or two ago about, you know, would like to test himself in the UFC at some point. So it really makes me wonder, does Bellator want to give him a title shot when you're making those comments? I mean, who's not excited about watching an Aaron Pico fight? I was surprised to see Nick Knowles on the prelims. I would have thought they would put him on the main card.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I know Newell lost his last fight, but to me, Nick Newell is just, when you're putting on a television product, he's a perfect story that will get someone to stop the channel. Like, if they're flipping and they see Nick Newell in the cage, they will not go to the next channel until that fight is over. And it's just, to me, it makes more sense to put that fight on your main card than DeMarcus Jackson and Mark Leminger. Hell, even Tywin Claxton's fight is something I would put on the main card over that Jackson Leminger fight.
Yeah, I mean, he's taking on Justin Gonzalez. Speaking of Tywin Claxton, the LFA champion, you know, coming over. One, you know, we have seen, I mean, most know we usually see LFA fighters go over to the UFC, but this is one of those LFA fighters that has ultimately signed with Bellator. I mean, yeah, that's, when you talk about the preliminary matchups, that is definitely one that does stick out to me, of Gonzalez and Tywin Claxton. How does Kyle Crutchmere bounce back from that loss against Cameron Lachinoff? You know, Lucas Brennan is a prospect to keep an eye out for. I saw Aiden Lee made a comment today, who's taking on Aaron Pico, that basically said, Friday night is my opportunity to become a name with the casual fans.
Well, I got bad news for him. The problem is Zach Freeman isn't a name with the casual fans. Yeah. He was the first one to take out Pico.
Like, I don't know if you saw this. When I was flipping through Instagram yesterday, and they on the Bellator Instagram, they put up the top five knockouts of Aaron Pico's career. And you forget about how brutal these knockouts have been that he's done. The one that he just landed a body shot. I mean, where he's just folded dudes over. Like, you kind of forget about just the vicious nature of the knockouts that he has had.
Yeah, Aaron. I think Aaron's going to get the win here. But it's that raw physical potential that's made him such a promising prospect. So I'm excited to see that fight. You know, Pico fight. Daly Jax is another damn good fight, actually. Like, this is Daly's, like, last hoorah, and he's looking really good. At the end of the day, he lands that one punch like he's done in his last two fights, you're going lights out. He's got that weapon. I mean, I think Jason Jackson's going to win this fight. The way Jason won his more previous fights is not, you know, he's going to have to wrestle. He's not going to have to stand up. That's what he did in the last few fights. Not going to want to stand up with Paul Daly. So it could be a bad matchup for Jackson if he takes the wrong tact. But, you know, we have a couple of instances on both these cards of, like, the old dude still got it, right? Like, Paul Daly's there, and then obviously 43-year-old Damian Maya is taking on Bilal Muhammad. So it'll be interesting to see which of these old welterweights, and I know Paul Daly is a 175-pounder now, but which of these old dudes performs better? My money would probably be on Paul Daly has a better chance of scoring the knockout win than Damian Maya, but the Daly-Jackson fight to me is pretty damn good too.
I just feel like the wrestling will be such a huge advantage for Jason Jackson, you know, in that match. Yeah. That's why I like Jason Jackson in that fight, and he's a minus 245 betting favorite. Now, on Saturday, it's UFC 263. Of course, we got two title fights, plus we got Leon Edwards, Nate Diaz. That is a five-round fight. You know, Izzy and Vittori, of course, they went at it last week on the fight night card as they were both on satellite there. And, you know, one of the things of... I guess one of the questions to me heading into this one is, did Jan Błachowicz put the blueprint out there for Marvin Vettori? Because, like, to me, if Marvin Vettori is walking away with the title on Saturday night, which kind of crazy thing, this fight is happening in the same venue that their first fight took place in. And to me, Marvin Vettori, it's got to be he's taken Israel Adesanya to take down City, and this fight plays out on the ground for Marvin Vettori to walk away as a champion.
Yeah, I think the blueprint is out there. I mean, the part of the blueprint that is hard to replicate is the size advantage Jan had over Israel. But the other thing is Marvin could replicate looking really good towards the end of the fight. You know, if he maintains that pressure, stealing rounds 4 and 5 could play crucial in winning the championship. In their initial fight, you know, winning round 3 was a big deal for Vettori, and he was able to do that with his wrestling. He was able to break Adesanya. So it's a real possibility. The blueprint is there, but Adesanya was just taught a very tough lesson on a high-profile stage, and I think he's going to be the type of guy who's going to rebound well off of that loss. You know, you got to think Israel spent so much of his time following losing to Jan with defensive wrestling, getting back to the feet, figuring out how to create distance to do it for a great time. In between the last time these two fought and when they have and today, I believe Israel's a better striker, has improved more so than Vettori has. So I do think when this fight plays out on the feet, I think Israel's going to have a better advantage. The one thing is, Marvin might be so aggressive that he's able to steal rounds on the feet. So this is a very good fight. I've gone back and forth. I'm picking Adesanya, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if Vettori wins, because not only does he have the wrestling in his toolbox, but sometimes when these great champions suffer that first loss, like Israel did against Jan, it just snowballs. And before you know it, the once great champion is now trying to fight his way back after a losing streak.
Yeah, you know, looking at the betting odds, I think this fight is much closer than what the betting odds have. Minus 255 for Izzy, plus 215 for Marvin Vettori. But, and look, because of that wrestling, Marvin Vettori may be able to use kind of, you know, that as an advantage to set up his strike game. Like, I think this is so huge for Adesanya. How does he bounce back in this one? Looks like he's been out in Arizona for a little while. I was talking to my buddy Pete Rogers Jr., and he was talking about when he trained out in New Mexico. And he's like, man, that air is something different. He goes, you got to be out there early to adjust your body to what it is out there. Look, if this fight plays on the feet, I think it's Izzy's fight to lose all day long. But yeah, I'm like you. I keep kind of going back and forth because I just kind of think about the wrestling aspect. I do like Izzy in this one. Now, mentioned about the first fight, Vettori was 2 for 6 in takedowns. Some of these numbers I thought were kind of surprising when I looked it up. Since the first matchup, Marvin Vettori has had 5 fights. Against Cesar Fajeya, he was 2 for 4 in takedowns. Andrew Sanchez did not even attempt a takedown. Carl Roberson, he was 2 for 3 in takedowns. Jack Hermanson, he was 0 for 1. And Kevin Holland, he was 11 for 17.
So maybe that last fight is what's really colored our impression that he's just a phenomenal wrestler. He has that ability, but we saw him do it 11 times against Kevin Holland. So we just think this guy won an NCAA championship.
Yeah, I mean, so you think about, if I look at 2 of those 5 opponents being Kevin Holland and Carl Roberson, I don't, you know, both of them, I look at, they're stand-up fighters. To me, you know, those are fights that the game plan was very easy, but I was actually surprised when I saw that he only had 1 takedown attempt against Jack Hermanson, and then none against Andrew Sanchez. But, I mean, look, it's, you know, and the one thing about Marvin Vettori, he was the benefactor of Robert Whittaker saying, no, I'm not taking this fight on 2 months notice because of obviously everything with the COVID protocols in New Zealand and everything that went into that. It was nice to finally see Dana White come out and say, yes, Robert Whittaker is next. There had been this a while that he didn't want to come out and proclaim that, but what he did proclaim, I don't know if you saw this, apparently the winner of Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz will be after Robert Whittaker.
At middleweight?
Or excuse me, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman. Excuse me, I was thinking welterweight. But no, at welterweight, I thought it was interesting after Colby Covington.
You can talk me
because they're doing Colby and Usman the rematch at some point this year. But I thought it was interesting that he's talking about a Nate Diaz win equals a title shot.
Dude, that doesn't shock me at all. Because that doesn't shock me at all. Because when you said middleweight, I'm like, you know. Nate fighting Adesanya, you could put that on pay-per-view if he wins. I know he's not a middleweight, but Diaz is such a big star that I totally thought that was a possibility.
It's tell you how much of a star to me Nate Diaz is. I actually watched Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus last night because Nate was had an interview spot on it.
Exactly. Case in point. I don't even know what the hell Stephen A's World is. What is that?
It's essentially a solo show where basically it's essentially him doing interviews and giving his thoughts on, you know, what's going on in the sports world. Like last night's episode was him talking about what's wrong with the Milwaukee Bucks. And then he was praising the Phoenix Suns fans for their performance there in game one. And then he did an interview with Nate Diaz where, it's very clear to me that the fight Nate, there's two fights Nate wants after this. It's rematches or a trilogy matchup against Conor McGregor or a rematch against Jorge Masvidal. It's very clear that that's his mindset. And, you know, one of the things that also says a lot about Nate Diaz and kind of, you know, how much money he's made in this fight game is the fact of, if you watch the first episode Embedded, he's flying in on a private jet and he's in his own Airbnb overseeing the mountains there in Arizona.
Yeah, man. And it's amazing to think that he's third on this card. You know, it lets you know that this is one hell of a pay-per-view when one of your biggest stars, who's that damn rich, isn't your main event, isn't your co-main event.
I don't like the matchup for him, though.
No, it's a bad matchup. It really is. First and foremost, you know what Nate Diaz does a lot? He bleeds. You know what Leon does a lot? He elbows you. I mean, this might be a TKO cut, but the fight style Leon Edwards is a bad matchup for Nate Diaz, and I think, you know, if you listen to preview shows, predictions, I think you will find very few people picking Nate Diaz to win, which is usually when he prevails. So don't be shocked if he pulls off the upset. But for Edwards, man, I think there's got to be a lot of frustration coming out of the situation when he fought Muhammad. He waited so long to prove himself once again. This represents a second chance, and I think he's going to do just that. I think he will impress big time with the win over Diaz.
I mean, look, this is his opportunity to become a known commodity in that MMA casual fan base. Because, like, look, if you go out on Saturday night to watch these fights, my guess would be is that a majority of the building is going to be rooting for Nate Diaz to win. And if Leon Edwards can get the job done, Leon Edwards could potentially become a household name because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a huge fight for Edwards to build his star. I mean, you know, look at the last two guys to beat Diaz, Masvidal, McGregor. Pretty big stars. You know, McGregor and Masvidal were stars before the Diaz fights. But, you know, the guys who beat Diaz generally get a huge bump in notoriety and they become household names. And I think Edwards, on this pay-per-view in particular, will do just that. So I think this is a great opportunity. He faced so much adversity when it comes to not being able to fight during the pandemic, having fights scratched and whatnot. This represents a phenomenal reward for a guy who's persevered through so much. But am I rooting for Nate Diaz? Yes, I am. Because to watch the Stockton native get a win, I mean, it would be an amazing moment. It really would.
And you know this. While no one in the UFC is ever going to come out and say who they would like to win a fight, we all know who they would really like to win this fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like the difference between one of your biggest stars winning a fight and someone who's one of your best fighters winning a fight. Who do you want? The star. You always want the star because you want him. Because Nate Diaz is a dude you can put on main event pay-per-view, right?
And look, if I'm Kamaru Usman, I'm the biggest Nate Diaz fan on Saturday night.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, Diaz Edwards, to me, is probably bringing more people to this pay-per-view than either of the title fights.
Oh, no question. Oh, no. I will say this, though. The fight Izzy had against Jan, I just, it opened my eyes up because, you know, at one of our properties where we show UFC pay-per-views, or what we have shown UFC pay-per-views, we got a lot of calls on that day asking if we were going to have the Izzy fight. And that really stuck out to me. But look, Nate is by far the biggest star on this one. And I think because of Nate being on this card, it's really overshadowed Figueiredo and Moreno. Look, I know for the most part, fans are not all intrigued with 125-pound fights. I mean, obviously, the matchup they had, you know, a couple months ago was a great fight that these two of these guys had here. And I kind of like Moreno in this spot here. I like the fact that he's moved his training to Las Vegas. He's taken advantage of the PEI. He's, you know, there was a piece on the first episode of Embedded where, you know, he's talking about, he's like, look, I would love to be in Tijuana, but this is where I need to be for my career at this point. They did a great job in that first episode of Embedded, just kind of giving you an inside look into his life and how he likes to collect Legos and the things that he collects in his life. But to me, like, I just, for some reason, I think Moreno gets the job done on Saturday night.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, this was the best flyweight fight in the history of the division. You know, it probably was. I mean, you know, Cejudo's fight with DJ is pretty damn good, too. But I think this was the best flyweight fight of all time, the last time these two fought. I see what you're saying. One thing is, you know, Figueiredo's is 33 years old compared to the 27-year-old Moreno. You could make the case that Moreno's more so in his athletic prime, maybe a little faster. Maybe higher volume and the change in training helps out too. The thing that I keep going back to is that Davison Figueiredo was hospitalized the week of their last fight. And the fact that Figueiredo fought like that, and he would have won the fight if he didn't get a point deducted in the first round, by the way. The fact that he fought that well, having been in the damn hospital that week, is why I'm picking Figueiredo. The other big reason why I'm picking Davison over Moreno is that while Moreno showcased the ability to survive Davison's fight, showed the ability to survive Davison's power in the first fight, that's not something I'm willing to bank on time and again. So I think Davison was able to land often, and his power is the difference maker between these two competitors, and that's why I think Figueiredo is going to win.
I'll put you on the spot. I'll give my answer as well. True, false. Two new champions will be crowned on Saturday night.
False. I'll go false, but I don't feel good about it.
I will go false as well. Like if I sat there and said,
hold on. What if we go to two new champions will be crowned this weekend?
I say true.
Including Lee Mamasov, basically, because obviously that's not on the weekend, but yeah.
If you said out of those three title fights that we have two new champions, I would say true. The reason I say false is just more of, the flyweight fight to me is a coin flip fight. You know, the one thing about Figueiredo is he's got that fight-ending ability at any moment. You know, obviously we've seen the weight issues he's had in the past. I just think that Adesanya has become a you know, as much as Armored Tory's improved, I think that there's been as much improvements from Izzy Adesanya. But it's an interesting question. I would love to know what our listeners think. If you think two new champions are we going to have two new champions on Saturday night?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think the history of the sport tells you the answer is going to be true, because that's generally what happens when a title is on the line. It tends to change hands. But man, I mean, I'm hot, bro. Like, it's not just those three fights, by the way. Like, Maya Muhammad, I'm interested in. Man, if Maya is able to pull off a win at 43, that would be sick. I don't think he's going to do it. I think Muhammad has a pretty clear path to victory here. But I'm excited to watch old man Maya, you know, go at it, you know, to see if he can get back in the winner's circle.
It's a big fight for Bilal Muhammad. I mean, you know, obviously he was frustrated with not being able to get the rematch against Leon Edwards, but it's a big matchup for him. I mean, look, I think top to bottom, when you're talking about the early prelims to the TV prelims to the main card, it's a solid fight card that the UFC has put together. Jamal Hill and Paul Craig is going to kick off the main card. There is some heat between those two guys. I think you're going to me, that fight delivers. I do like the matchup between Drew Dober and Brad Riddell on the which is going to be the feature TV prelim. You got the Eric Anders, Darren Stewart, they're running it back then after the illegal knee. Murphy Calderwood's a good fight. Evalev and Uwadu is one that definitely intrigues me as well. Terrence McKinney, first off, let's send the healing vibes out to Frank Camacho, involved in a car accident, very scary situation there. So send the healing vibes out to him. Terrence McKinney now steps in. And now this, I believe, is the third straight LFA main event winner to get a short notice fight in the UFC, a drastic change up in opponent for Matt Frivola, you know, because Terrence McKinney does have a wrestling background, but coming off a vicious ground and pound victory at the LFA. Prior to that, he had two head kick knockouts. I want to say in combined like 36 seconds, some crazy number there. You know, and then I was kind of surprised to see Steven Peterson's not a bigger favorite against Chase Hooper.
My man Hooper's only lost one fight, man. You know, he's the high-flying prospect.
But there is a clear deficiency in his game. Clear deficiency.
And we've seen Peterson knock people's blocks off. Yeah, it's a bad matchup for Hooper.
It's an odd matchup to me from the UFC's aspect. If you are all of, and clearly they have very much been in the Chase Hooper promotional business, you know, when they gave him that development deal after a contender series, I remember when I saw this fight got booked, I was like, that's kind of an odd matchup. Like, cause like Steven Peterson's path to victory is very clear. You know, the only thing is can he keep it on the feet? I mean, obviously Chase Hooper's got to get the fight to the ground.
Yes. Yes. And, it's like Chase is a guy who has like, he's kind of interesting, and it's like you would want to cultivate that guy, not just throw him in there with Steven Peterson. So it is a bad matchup. I'm picking Hooper. I don't know. I'm feeling spicy. I think he's going to get to the ground, but absolutely, man, his stand-up looked awful and has looked awful. It's going to take a long time until he gets to a UFC level because he is so far below average on the feet, but what makes him stand out is his grappling. I think he wins it with that aspect. But, yeah, you mentioned it, bro. Really great card. I think a lot of heavyweight fights are going to be interesting. Got a striker versus a grappler, and I think both guys are exciting. And then I think the winner, Calderwood, Lauren Murphy, has a real chance to fight for the flyweight title. So that's a pretty important fight, kind of hidden on the prelims.
Yeah, I mean, the thing at 125 pounds is just what's going to get us excited as a potential someone who could dethrone Valentina Shevchenko. I still think the name that comes to my mind is the fact that she's now moving up to 125 pounds is Tatiana Suarez.
Yeah, I think so. I think because a lot of those other ones are known commodities, and Tatiana is known at her previous weight class, but man, more so than anyone else, that's the right answer because to me, she exhibits the highest ceiling out of all the potential challengers. And that's what you're looking for an interesting match with Shevchenko. Not someone we know where the ceiling is, but someone that makes this question, what if? Because that's the type of questions you got to ask when you have an all-time great just reigning as champion of the weight class.
I know we didn't talk much about what happened last week at the UFC Fight Night card, but I'll say this. If you did not watch the fights, you got to go back and watch Santiago Ponzinibbio and Miguel Baeza. Those two guys just absolutely deliver. There was a point definitely in that third round, like, how is Miguel Baeza standing?
Yeah, man, it was an amazing fight. You could tell it was emotional because Santiago has faced so much stuff, tough stuff with the infection issues, the illnesses. He comes back, and what happens? He loses. So you could tell he was fighting for his life. In this fight, he was fighting for his chance to one day fight for the championship. And the guy in front of him was a tough SOB. Miguel Baeza was tough, man. His leg kicks were brutal in round one. And yes, this is a must-watch fight. Baeza Ponzinibbio was amazing. If you want to skip something, you can skip Stropoli and Dolidze. That fight was boring as hell. Roman Dolidze just clinched him against the cage. And poor Walt Harris looked really good for about 2 minutes, and he got put on his back, and he lost to Marcin Tybura.
Yeah, man, he was looking great. And I thought, like, even when he landed some good strikes, I thought he showed some good patience, too. You know, something we necessarily haven't seen out of Walt. We'll mention Sean Woodson, who got a win on the preliminary card against Yusuf Zalal. I am scheduled to talk to him here in a couple of days, so that'll be a part of Sunday's podcast. I want to mention something to you about one of the interviews that I had on this past Sunday's podcast with Jesse Finney, of course, the CEO of Shamrock FC. So they've got fight cards going back to back nights here at the end of the month. So one of their fights, it's a winner take all fight, as in the winner gets all of the purse money.
What? Yeah. That's insane. So somebody's going to come home with no money?
Correct. And they both agreed to it.
That's crazy. That is a bad idea.
Yeah, it's so at Shamrock FC 329, Jeff Crotty against Perez Dent at 170 pounds. Apparently, Jeff Crotty is the one who suggested this, and Dent said, cool. Apparently, Crotty thinks Dent's a bum, essentially, from the way it came off to me. But yeah, winner take all fight.
That's amazing. God, listen to that interview. You know, the fact that you could get knocked out and then go home with $0 is so depressing. I can't even imagine. I mean, that is high stakes. But if someone's making that poor of a decision, you know there's going to be a knockout in that fight. They're not going to play it safe. I mean, that is interesting. I mean,
you ain't leaving that up to the judges. No way.
No, it's 0% chance. The idea that you could go do an MMA fight and not get a single penny is crazy.
Yeah. Also on Sunday's podcast, I had Meyer Malaki, the president of the XFC. He said that their welterweight final is going to be on August 6th in Michigan, expecting that they're going to have 100% capacity for that one. And then he said the lightweight final, which will feature Kurt Hollebaut, they are targeting August the 1st in Cancun. And also they are going to start a 16-man bantamweight tournament. It'll be two separate tournaments, essentially, where eight men will be from North America or United States, and then the other eight will be from Latin America. I thought one of the more interesting things he said to me was he talked about how, you know, sometimes the travel restrictions because of COVID have sometimes become a little bit of an issue for them. But he did drop a little bit of nuggets in that conversation. But, you know, look, I'm looking forward to the next couple of nights of MMA. Got some great action to take place there. Anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
Man, nothing, man. I'm just excited that you got your second vaccine, bro. Ready to thrive. It's going to be a big time 2021, big time 2022. You know, I'm out here training pro wrestling. You're out here grinding on Awesomeo and doing big things. The Buccaneers looking to repeat. I'll root for you because my Houston Texans suck. And, you know, I'm excited, man. I'm excited. It's always a big time feel whenever we got a big time UFC pay-per-view. And we are going to have so much to talk about next week because we have a big UFC pay-per-view, big Bellator fight, and Clarissa Shields. Is she going to get exposed or is she going to let us know that she's the next star at PFL, bro? I'm hyped for next week's podcast.
Here's a crazy thing in my world, Daniel. Is I believe we're just a little more than 2 months away from my first preseason game.
It flies by. It feels like the Super Bowl was a month ago.
Yeah, you know, mini camps are going on around the league right now. Yeah, I want to say August the 14th is our first preseason game here in Tampa.
Man, there's nothing more beautiful than preseason. You know, this is one of the first ones. I am not looking forward to the NFL season because, like, my Texans have – it's been a long time since the Texans have been this depressing. It's really depressing. It's bad. Like, it's dark. Like, it's really dark out here. And so, like, I'm excited for football, but I'm being honest with you, I'm depressed because, like, if you're a fan of, like, 27 of the NFL teams, you can probably talk yourself into having a good season, but I'm one of those five teams that you can't. So it sucks, but I'm excited for NFL football, man. I'm excited to see if Tom Brady can repeat because if he can, he's already the GOAT. But the growth horns just get a little bit taller.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's just crazy. It feels like the Super Bowl was just like yesterday. I mean, it's just crazy, yeah. You know. Or, you know, it doesn't feel like you know 4 months have passed. You know, since that game, it's crazy. But right now is a good time to be a Tampa Bay sports fan with what's going on with the Bucks, what's going on with the Lightning, what's going on with the Rays. I mean, yeah, it's a great time. Of course, if you do want to make sure you check out our presenting sponsor, DraftKings. You got to download that DraftKings app now and use the promo code MMAReport for your shot at millions of dollars in total prizes throughout the week. That is promo code MMAReport to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, be sure to give us a follow on Twitter. I am at Jason_Floyd. He is at Daniel Galvan DGG. So next episode of the podcast will come out on Sunday. And of course, myself and Daniel will be back here next week for another edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you can listen and download on your favorite podcasting platform at radioinfluence.com.